are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Yes, you are, and Happy New Year, everybody, and Happy New Year to you, Paul.
Merry New Year.
Merry New Year.
Merry New Year.
Yeah.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
I'm ecstatic to not be in Chicago.
You had me on pins and nails there.
But
you
said
ecstatic. I didn't know if you were going to go excited.
Excited. Or? I'm a little of everything, but I'm just happy to be in the magic that is Southern California this time of
and
year.
And what is it, about 70 degrees today?
Oh, we can't do that. We have global listeners, and they'll be throwing their computers across the room in anger when they hear us gloat about that. Although it's not intentional gloating.
Of course it's not.
Something we're lucky enough to have. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com. We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar. Two guests in one in studio today, beginning with a gentleman who is a baritone soloist with symphony orchestras at the age of 16, and he has been a soloist or recording artist with organizations such as the London City Symphony, the Prague Symphony, the West Side Symphony, the Pasadena, Phoenix, Utah, and San Diego Symphonies, and the Los Angeles Baroque Orchestra. And we haven't even started on his acting resume, but we're going to let him chat about that. He's here to talk about playing the title role in the legendary Barrymore at the equally legendary El Portal Theater. Please welcome to the show, Gordon Goodman is with us here. Hey, Gordon, how are you?
Fine, I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me.
So nice to have you with us. Michael Sterling had to step outside briefly because he's...
outside the window. He's cleaning it, but...
He's cleaning it. Yeah. Well, you know, he wears a lot of hats here. You know, he's a helper. We have another guest who we may or may not have, actually, because Michael is on the phone now talking to them. But, Gordon, I'm going to give him his intro anyway, so bear with us if you would. He's a man who has worn just about every hat one can in the biz called show. He's an actor. He's an author. He's a playwright. He's a composer, record producer, theater and film director, with credits under each of these headings far too numerous to list here. He's a Grammy Award nominee. And today, hopefully, if he shows up or calls in, we're not sure how we're going to get him, whether it's in person or electronically, but he'll be discussing his role as director of One Starry Night, Hollywood and Broadway Stars Come Together to Fight ALS, a one-night benefit performance at the Pasadena Playhouse this Monday, January 13th. His name is Bruce Kimmel. And hopefully... we don't know what the situation is with him, but we will find out shortly. And here he is. He's back. He's bigger than ever. Michael Sterling has joined us here in the land of the living. What's the story with Bruce?
Mr. Kimmel was just slightly lost, but he is on his way. Yeah,
all right.
He's very close by, as a matter of fact.
Oh, good. Good to hear. Good to hear. Yeah. Nice to have him. Before we chat with Gordon, I wanted to ask you, Michael.
Yes.
We've been gone for a long time, but can you wrap up your week for us, or your weeks, I should say?
My weeks. I had a wonderful Christmas, though it took me, I spent it with dear friends down south near San Diego in Rancho Bernardo. Do you know where that is? Yeah, by Solana Beach, La Jolla, in that area.
Love that area. I was just down there right before Christmas. Monica and I stayed in Solano Beach. Beautiful little community.
Yes, it is
there.
Indeed. Yeah. And the only downside of
is it Solana or Solano?
Solana.
Solana, yeah. Okay. It's a feminine beach.
It is, yeah.
Okay.
On Tuesdays and Thursdays.
A bit depending on when you go. Yes.
You wear red.
And then God knows what
Tuesday
happens.
Tuesday night is Ladies' Beach.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, that's what they're calling it? Okay. Yeah. All right. So, at any rate, I said to my friends, okay, I'm going to take the train down, guys, so that I don't have to drive, and I can just kind of leisurely go south. And avoid the traffic. On Christmas Eve is when I left. So 4 o'clock, I show up at the Glendale Amtrak station. And instead of going downtown Union Station, because I didn't want to assume that everything was going to be free-flowing on the... The 101 there.
Right.
And no train showed up at 4 o'clock. So then a couple people showed up, and there's three, four of us at the platform, and we went on the website with our phones, and the train had a fire in the engine.
Oh my God!
Holy cow!
In Santa Barbara. So it was stuck there. So nothing could pass it, and it had to eventually be towed into Los Angeles.
On Christmas Eve.
On Christmas
Eve.
Wow. But I said, you know what? Don't get upset, because now, you know, we're going to all be rebooked on a train going south. And I said, you're here. You know Glendale. There's some nice restaurants here. You'll go. You'll have a nice meal instead of the fabulous meal that your friends are preparing at their beautiful home in the Rancho Bernardo Country Club. So anyhow, that happened one more time as the evening progressed. It was a 6:50 reschedule that didn't get there until 8:40. And I got to my destination at 11:30.
Oh, my gosh.
That was off the train,
but how
was now packed.
How was the ride?
The ride was fine.
Was it in
Yes. I mean, but it,
on
it
Christmas
was,
Eve, too.
On Christmas Eve, but it was overbooked.
Oh, sure. It would be packed. Yeah, yeah. How long a ride is it on the train?
It's about 2:40.
Oh, okay.
That area.
So not significantly longer than driving it.
No, but you just have the, you know, you're free of the worries of getting stuck and, you know, all sorts of accidents and that kind of stuff, I guess. Well, but, you know.
In your case, the accident happened on the train track.
Exactly. And there he is. Mr. Bruce Kimmel is just arriving.
Bruce has joined us. Hello, Bruce. How are you?
The people are applauding, Bruce.
Yes.
They're applauding.
Hello, Gordon.
Hey.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you. We were just wrapping up our year-end holidays. Anyhow, I had a lovely Christmas day
with
my friends and on into the new year. So it's been good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you?
I was good right until December 26th when I got sick, and I got better about 3 days ago. So it was a pretty epic sickness. One thing I do want to talk about, though, real briefly before we talk to these gentlemen that we have with us. Very excited about this. Read this in the New York Times this past week. Tony and Tina's is coming back to New York City. I'm a huge fan of that show. I actually did the Chicago production about a year. And that's going to be kicking off on March 5th with the ceremony. I love this. The ceremony is at the Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis High School, because they always do it in sort of a, you know, they have to have a, because they do the actual ceremony. And then the guests of the wedding have a walk through Schubert Alley, and they end up at Guy's American Kitchen and Bar right in Times Square. So right leading up to that, we want to get a couple of those people from New York to chat about it, since we are a global show, and support them, because it's always a great time, that show, and I had such a great time.
It is a fun show.
It's a great time.
I haven't seen it in years, but it's fun, yeah.
You saw it out here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Long time. You weren't in this production here.
No, just Chicago.
Yeah.
Just Chicago.
Okay.
But let's chat with these folks we have us here today.
Yes,
with us
indeed.
Here today. Let me, Michael, do you want to give Gordon the intro he is so aptly due?
Yes, I will. And are we starting with Gordon?
Yes, we're starting with Gordon.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Why am I all confused here?
Okay. questions get harder as we continue, Michael.
Okay, so you've already been through the fact that we have two guests today, including Mr. Bruce Kimmel. All right.
Mm-hmm.
And I am going to say, ladies and gentlemen, that our first guest has performed dozens of roles for the professional stage across the United States, including The Prince and the Wolf in Into the Woods, Charlie in Annie Get Your Gun, and Judd in Oklahoma, with co-starring roles on television for more than 30 years, beginning with classics like 21 Jump Street and In Living Color. He has worked on stage or screen with performers such as Bob Hope, Jack Nicholson, John Raitt, Ed Asner, Johnny Depp, Rich Little, Jim Carrey, Steve Martin, Leslie Uggams, Tim Curry, shall I go on, and many others. Currently, he's on stage at the legendary El Portal Theater playing the equally legendary John Barrymore in Barrymore. Please welcome Gordon Goodman.
Hello, hello, hello.
I was a little slow on the pickup there. I didn't give you your music as quick as I could, but I apologize for
and
that.
And such appropriate music it was, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. Damn, I missed it.
Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm good.
Okay. We were talking before we came in today, and I was talking about how I have such an innate respect for one-person shows, because having done one for as long as I did one, I'm curious if you don't mind jumping into that. How do you – what is your – mindset? We were talking about the venue itself, and you're in that, what's the Marilyn Monroe Studio?
Monroe Forum.
the Monroe Forum, which is the smaller venue there, which I'm very happy to hear, because I think this show, there's so much intimacy in this show, and the fact that it's in a smaller venue, I was happy to hear that it wasn't on the main stage at the El Portal, because I saw it with Christopher Plummer when I was in New York, and that was a big loss being so far from him. So how is that for you as a performer, that intimacy?
It's an interesting space, because in that horseshoe formation, the audience is kind of right on top of you, and so they see every nuance of your performance, and you have to include them in the performance, as opposed to a proscenium stage where you can kind of block the audience out, especially if you have lights in your eyes.
Right.
They become observers. But in this show, we were discussing this a little bit. You have to decide how you're going to treat the audience, who they are in the show.
Right.
And for me, and I've talked to many people about this, how do you approach the prompter who you never see? He's off stage. You don't see him until he comes out and takes his bow. How do you approach him, and how do you approach the audience? And in this case, I kind of, as Barrymore, have to approach the audience as ghosts in the theater that I'm just talking to, and eventually the prompter even as a ghost. And this is all happening in his own head.
Right. Oh, I don't remember the show. For the listeners who aren't as familiar with it, can you do like sort of a thumbnail synopsis of the evening?
Well, he comes out, you know, later on in his career, he wanted to recapture what he had done and recapture his fame. He was always trying to do that. He would always kind of stumble over his own feet and his own behavioral problems in doing so. And this was an effort on his part to rent a theater for one night and recap Richard III. And I can't tell you the end of it.
Right.
But he tried that at the Hollywood Bowl, actually.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. I don't know if it ever was mounted, but they were in negotiations. I know that for sure.
Really?
To do Richard. Oh, no, do Hamlet.
To do Hamlet. Okay.
Well, you know, I do know that Janet Miller, who's a wonderful director here in Los Angeles, I know that she had seen the show on Broadway, and I think you saw it on Broadway. Did you not?
I saw it here.
Oh, you saw it here.
Yeah.
Okay. But when Janet saw it on Broadway, I guess, if I'm not mistaken, she wrote in some notes that I read that she immediately got the script and kind of put it on a shelf and knew that she needed to do that show at some point in her career. She just didn't know when. And then when her, when the company that you are, the acting company or the theater company that you both have, you're a principal in that?
No, that's Janet.
The Good People?
Yeah, the Good People Theater Company.
He's good man. Good man.
My name is Good Man.
Yes. I work alone.
Yes.
she pulled it out, and then the challenge was who was going to play this role. What actor did she know? Because she wanted to make sure that it was someone that she did know. And then she went on the search for you.
Right. Well, she called me. And as I recall, I picked up the phone and I just heard this one word, Barrymore. And I recognized her voice. And all of a sudden, it just kind of felt right. And it kind of grew from there. It was a beautiful process. It was effortless working with her. I hope we have something that the audience likes.
Well, you already have. You know that you do from Field Test. This is basically a continuation of
It was picked up from a production in Hollywood, and the reviews. I was ecstatic over how people liked it, how much people liked it, and the reviews that we got. It was pretty phenomenal.
Obviously, you've done your research in order to play him. Did you know a great deal about him before you took that journey, or just would you?
I really didn't. I've always been a fan of old movies, and I watched him early on as a kid. I can remember as a teenager watching him in Grand Hotel, and I was struck at the time with his ease, his nonchalance, his not caring. And that's one of the things Spencer Tracy said about Lionel. It was like watching someone not act, which I thought
this is John Barrymore's brother,
Lionel
Barrymore. Yeah.
Now, that wasn't always the case because John had a difficult transition from stage to film. His expressions were quite large.
Right.
And when you have a close-up, it's like as soon as you raise your eyebrows, you're out of frame. You
know? Right.
So he had a little difficulty with that. But on certain films, if he was directed correctly, I mean, I've done that before, and I've done films where afterwards I look at it and I go, oh, my God, I could strangle that director for not telling me how close he was.
Because my facial expressions are visible
like
from space.
Chucko the Clown.
Yeah. Right.
So you really have to compensate. You're on stage, you can be sometimes as big as you want, depending on how big the venue is. You have to adjust it. Even body size makes a big difference as far as how much stage presence you have.
Yeah.
You know what I must say, Gordon, really, you as a performer, and the last thing that I saw you in was Parade down for 3D Theatricals. And as extraordinary as that production was and the cast, the one thing that I remember being struck by the most of that production was the fact that every single person on a stage, when it was full company on the stage, everybody was in character doing what it was that they did, you included, in your menacing kind of, you know, intense walks across the stage. I mean, you stand out very clearly when you are on a stage.
It's just the way I comb my hair.
Is that it? Yeah. Well, keep combing it that way.
I didn't want to say anything, but I. we should tell people how they can see this. This is at the. Gordon Goodman is Barrymore, and that's at the El Portal Theater. It is through January 19th only, so it is a brief run. That's what, six shows? There's eight shows?
No, it's eight shows. It's a beautiful theater. It's run by Peggy Forrest and Jay Irwin there. Historic. Oh, yeah. I can remember giving Donald O'Connor a ride to the theater one day, and he said, yeah, I performed here when I was 11.
Oh, my.
And it's called that forum, the Monroe Forum, is called that because what was her connection?
She went
to
the elementary school directly behind the El Portal Theater. Okay. And for the 50th anniversary of her death, which was, I believe, this last year. Am I correct? And they renamed it the Monroe Forum. And there's you know, photographically now in that area, there's wonderful photos of her and so forth. But the theater alone, as a movie palace back when it was first built, you know, attracted the likes of everyone out here in Hollywood. And this
Cher was a ticket taker there.
Well, she was a ticket taker, and she sold popcorn at the concession stands.
Unbelievable. To Debbie Reynolds and people
like
that.
To Debbie Reynolds, yes. We're talking about the El Portal Theater. To get tickets for Barrymore, it's elportaltheater.com. Theater has the R-E spelling, elportaltheater.com. Or you can call 818-508-4200 or 866-811-4111, and we will throw that information out there.
And it's opening night tonight.
Yes. I want to go see that this weekend.
Yeah, I think you should. I think we all should.
I'm going to go there, going to eat at the Federal.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk across the street.
There you go.
Go and do that, you know. You know about this place, the Federal up there?
I do.
It's a little great
bit.
Little space.
So does Bruce Kimmel. He knows a lot about it. Yeah. We have fun there.
Oh, I love that space. Get the fish and chips.
You know, you've always said that, Paul, and I finally did.
Yes, and?
I loved them.
Aren't they good?
I'm not a big fan of fish and chips, but I loved those.
Yeah. Gordon, another thing I wanted to ask you, because we talked about this in the lobby, and I was telling...
Well, I think here on the West Coast, people who are on the East Coast maybe don't understand this, or particularly in New York. But if you go to New York and you say to people, how many people here are tourists? About 70% of the audience is going to raise their hand. Theater's kept alive in New York because of tourism. Nobody flies to L.A. to see theater. And on the West Coast, because of finances, because theaters don't have the finances that they do sometimes in New York, you're dealing with shorter rehearsal periods. And that's why opera singers today in the same situations are taking beta blockers. And I mean, many performers are taking beta blockers today just to stop stage fright because of the stress. It's really the stress more than anything else that causes stage fright.
Right.
So I did a study. You know, just about anybody you can name. Laurence Olivier had stage fright very, very badly. And in the old days, one of the fastest ways to get rid of the stage fright was to drink.
Yeah.
It works. The problem is the side effects.
Right. Yeah.
and starts to ruin your life.
Well, and Barbara Streisand to some degree.
Oh,
I think,
oh yeah,
horrible
as well,
stage,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, it begins to become something great, bigger than life, and the only way to get around it is systematic desensitization. You just shove a person out on stage over and over and over again until they have no pain from it. They have
right.
they realize their body begins to accept the fact that there's no ramification.
Mm. I'm not until getting hurt. Until that's as comfortable a place exactly. to be as yeah. walking down the street.
This is like PTSD and for veterans.
Right.
You just have to systematically over a long period of time get used to the fact that this is okay. You know, blow up the bombs next to them without being hurt.
Right.
And pretty soon you become desensitized to it. And stage fright is no different. But here on the West Coast, we don't have rehearsal periods that are long enough, so the stress levels are very high
right,
for people.
Right, yeah.
And if you can remove that, for this show, for example, I gave myself 6 weeks, which was very sufficient for me. And I got opening night. On opening night, I was fine. Oh. I didn't have any qualms.
You know, so it's parallel to just what we know as anxiety, which can, you know, and panic and so forth. That can be very, very debilitating emotionally and sometimes physically.
And some personality types are more prone to it.
Yes.
And if you are, then you just give yourself a longer time to rehearse.
I'm curious, yeah. Bruce, did you ever experience anything like that? Did you ever battle it in your performance?
Not when I was acting in general. I never actually ever had it. But when I started doing the Kritzerland shows, I hadn't been on a stage in 30 years.
Oh, wow.
And I was at the Gardenia at that point. The first 4 shows, I was shaking, you know, because I read. I don't learn anything. And I mean, literally like this, you know, and totally uncomfortable. And then as they would laugh or, you know, something would be, I would get more comfortable. And now it's like, get me out there.
Now it's like,
put me anywhere. I'll go to the opening of a door.
Yeah, Sherwood Schwartz was telling me that Clark Gable, when he came on the Bob Hope show, because Sherwood wrote most of the Bob Hope shows, had to read something. He had a piece of paper, and he had to read something in a microphone, and he was shaking so badly that Bob Hope had to come out and reach over his shoulders and grab the paper like it was a planned thing just to stop him from shaking.
Right.
Anything that's new and different can throw us into a stressful.
I'm always reminded of that great scene in My Favorite Year when Peter O'Toole's character Alan Swan suddenly discovers that there's going to be a live audience. It's just a great, you know.
Right.
I haven't been in front of a, you know, an audience in 28 years. I played a butler. I had one line. I forgot it. It's beautiful. Interestingly enough, I used to have panic attacks leading up to my stage fright. And when I had the panic attacks, getting ready to go on stage was the only time that I wasn't nervous because I had something to focus on. And the anxiety episodes happened from that spiral of not having something to focus on. So I found that interesting that performing yeah. was actually combating the anxiety.
Well, the shaking is just adrenaline.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So you
yeah.
can the interesting thing is that people who have fun with it just take it another way. They just look at it another way. That's all it is a mm-hmm. perspective.
Yeah.
So they'll look at the shaking and go, God, I can't wait to get out yeah. there. It must yeah. mean I'm excited. And other people look at the shaking and go, oh, my God, I'm scared to death.
You just said it. You relabel fear as excitement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
And I, too, suffered from the same thing. So
did
and,
you?
And yeah. Panic. Yeah.
I didn't realize
oh, yeah.
that.
Yeah. Big time.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Happened on a plane going to Chicago.
Oh, that's right. You did tell me about that.
That was the beginning of it anyway. But it's under control now.
Well, yeah. But you're drunk half the time.
but it works.
I am joking, of course. We are talking to Bruce Kimmel and Gordon Goodman. We're going to be talking to Bruce shortly. But we want to remind our audience here how to get tickets to see Barrymore at the El Portal Theater, which elportaltheater.com. 8 shows only, opening tonight through January 19th only. And the website I mentioned, but for tickets, 818-508-4200. Or 866-811-4111. It's a lot of ones to get
there
through
is.
There.
There is, yeah.
And, but looking forward to it. I'm going to try to see it on Saturday. Michael, before
yes.
we chat with Bruce and continue to chat with Gordon, shall we do our arts calendar?
I think so.
Shall I kick it off?
Why don't you?
I will do that.
Go ahead.
A buoyant dead... Is it buoyant?
Yes. Buoyant.
I never knew how to say that. Boo, because I see buoy every time I see it rather than buoyant.
What would you say, buoyant?
No, no, I wouldn't say that. I'm not an idiot. A boyish, dead serious comedy about love and survival that asks the question, are men really more trouble than they're worth? Aspirin and elephants is entertainment pure and simple, says The Hollywood Reporter. As a mother and father take their daughters and son-in-laws on a happy anniversary cruise and quickly find themselves awash in a sea of stormy relationships. 25 years after it launched at Santa Monica Playhouse, playwright Jerry Mayer's smash hit comedy docks again for a limited silver anniversary run from the internationally acclaimed team that brought you Almost Perfect, A Love Affair, and Killjoy, and features an outstanding cast of film, television, and theater artists. Aspirin Elephants is extended through March 16th at Santa Monica Playhouse. That's 1211 4th Street in Santa Monica. For tickets, santamonicaplayhouse.com.
Sounds interesting.
It does, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think
Aspirin
so.
Aspirin and elephants. That's
as interesting deep. As what I'm going to talk about. Before Peter was Pan, he was just a boy. But when the orphans, when this orphan actually climbs aboard the good ship Neverland, he whisks us away on an exhilarating adventure to answer the century-old question, how did Peter Pan become the boy who never grew up? In this innovative and imaginative play based on the best-selling Disney Hyperion novel by Dave Barry and Ridley Pearson, a company of wildly talented actors play more than 100 unforgettable characters in the epic origin story of popular culture's most enduring and beloved hero. No strings, no wires, Peter sails, swims, swashbuckles, and ultimately soars on pure imagination, inspired stagecraft, and fearless theatricality. Peter and the Starcatcher plays through this weekend only at the Amundsen Theater. Tickets are available at centertheatergroup.org. And I must say, I saw it. I went to opening night. It was absolutely stunning.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A little kind of reminiscent of British panto, though not in the full-blown sense of that word.
But that call-and-response thing.
Yes, and it was
cheering the hero and booing the villain.
I don't think I was alone in the audience who was very excited to see it, but the first 10 minutes it takes you have to adapt to this process. But man, oh man, these kids, this company was amazing.
Once you're on the ride, you're
on
the ride.
And it was beautiful to look at, beautifully staged, beautifully directed.
Yeah. Yeah. And great reviews.
Very much so.
All right, our next guest, as an actor, he has appeared in many TV shows, including The Partridge Family, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Alice and MASH. If only there could be some that people knew.
I know, right?
He is the director of the first nudie musical, The Creature Wasn't Nice, and Prime Suspect, among others. He became a record producer in 1993, producing many cast albums, Broadway and off-Broadway, and was nominated for a Grammy for the revival cast album of Hello, Dolly. To date, he has produced well over 180 CDs, and his current label is Kritzerland, which has issued cast albums, singers, and a series of reissues of limited edition soundtracks. As we mentioned earlier, he's currently playing the role of director for One Starry Night, Hollywood and Broadway stars come together to fight ALS, a one-night benefit performance at the Pasadena Playhouse this Monday, January 13th. Please welcome Bruce Kimmel.
Yeah! I don't know how you fit all those people.
I know. Well, you brought them, Bruce. You brought them. So, I mean, we just do what you tell us to do. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
So glad to have you on the show here.
I think this is such a wonderful idea to do this benefit for that particular cause. And how, Bruce, did this come together?
It was really Juliana and Hansen, who's co-producing it, and Jonathan White,
right,
who works at the Pasadena Playhouse, and it was their idea to do it, and they came to me 5 months ago to write it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not that interested in writing it. Who's directing it? And they said, well, we don't need a director. And I'm going, oh, okay.
Really?
Having done many of these, let me tell you the world of hurt you're in for, even with a director. So they said, would you do that? And I said, yes. It's a really interesting horrible disease, but very interesting in that so many people don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
They have no, it's like they're two poster children for diseases. Right. It's AIDS and cancer. Mm-hmm. And it's like nothing else exists in the world. But this is, so many people who are doing the show have personal terrible stories about
this. It's touched them somehow.
Yeah. It's like we brought on John Sloman at the last minute to replace somebody, and he said, my brother died from it. And it's like one of the presenters' father died from it. And it's
often referred to as Lou Gehrig.
Lou Gehrig's disease.
Since he brought it out into the open.
But it seems like it's, when I was growing up, it was very uncommon to hear about that.
To hear about a particular person, that disease. Oh, that disorder.
Okay. You know, you heard about muscular dystrophy because of Jerry Lewis. You heard about cancer always. You heard about, and when AIDS came, you heard about AIDS. But so it was really interesting to read up on it and see just how horrifying it is. And how,
oh, it is brutal. It is one of the slowest, most agonizing.
And how prevalent. Yeah. So I was very much on board to do this.
You know, it's one of those things that at that time.
It attacks the whole nervous system.
It's a degenerative nervous disorder, right? I mean, it's the degeneration.
To the point where your brain can no longer figure everything out.
Yeah.
Well, I think you are conscious. That's the hell of it.
Yeah.
Your body goes out of control, and that's you're observing the whole process, which is the living hell.
Having a lucidity you don't want to have. But one of the things that is interesting, it was such a different time. In terms of the press and sort of respecting people when Lou Gehrig made his announcement in Pride of the Yankees, the end of that film where he has that speech about being the luckiest man in the world. But after it happened to him, Lou Gehrig went away and Lou Gehrig died privately. Mm-hmm. And so I think people think it's one of those things that people know that it kills people, but they don't know how horrible that journey is leading up to that. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine any. I mean, I'm racking my brain now trying to think, but it's such a horrible thing.
Do we know if there's been any sort of significant progress in finding a cure for this?
I don't know. Do you?
I don't. You know, it's an endless journey like cancer.
It seems to be more prevalent in the northern hemispheres where there's less sun.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Not ever ceases to amaze me, actually. You know, for what we know, we're such a technical world. We live in it, 24/7 now. And to, think that we can put people on another planet and do all the amazing, extraordinary things that we do, that we still cannot find cures for what is most common and what is killing.
It's shocking,
human.
Actually.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Although we should, however, embrace the strides we have taken. I mean, you look at what AIDS victims have now in terms of the longevity.
Absolutely.
You know, I want to go back to this to let people know about some of these amazing performers that they have for One Starry Night.
Quite
here.
A lineup that Bruce has put together.
I'm going to just read a couple of them, Michael, but please read the first one because I don't want to mangle her name. and you probably know it better than I. Is it Oba?
It's a him.
It's a him.
Well, there you go. It's right there.
Oba Babatunde.
Yes. Oba Babatunde.
I just interviewed him recently, actually, for Broadway.
I noticed you didn't repeat his name after Bruce said it.
I let you go for it.
James Barber, Kate Cole, Daisy Egan, who we've had on the show a couple of times. Love her. Crow Garrett, Jason Grah, also a friend of State of the Arts. Eileen Graff, had her on the show. Juliana Hansen, Melanie Hardin.
Melora.
Melora?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I thought it was Abba Baba Tunde. Jean Louisa Kelly, Jason and Nolan Livesay, Gary Morgan.
Livesay.
Are you kidding me now?
Actually,
Livesay.
I'm not believing
Sorry,
you.
Lisa.
Gary Morgan and, of course, the Flying Morgans, Karen Morrow, James Mulligan, Regan Pasternak, Jonathan Pendragon, Christy Carlson Romano, Joan Ryan, Rex Smith. Boy, was I happy to get to Rex Smith.
Yes.
Charlene Tilton and Terry White and more to be announced. Boy, there's a lineup. Yeah,
actually, several of those are not in the show, but we have Bruce Valanche now. And it's a great group.
Well, you never do anything without great people on the stage, Bruce. So I can only imagine what a great... I will ask one thing. Charlene Tilton, I didn't know she sang.
She doesn't. She's presenting.
Oh, very good. All right. Well, she's as cute as a button.
She is.
And a nice lady on top of it.
Oh, wow.
And Juliana Hansen alone, could do the whole show for me, and I would be so happy.
Oh, yeah, right? And I'm looking at the other, amazing. Jason Graw and Jason. Eileen Graff, yeah.
And we have, it's not on the list, but Richard Sherman is going to be there.
Sweet, sweet.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, Bruce, is there, you mentioned writing, is there sort of a narrative that you've put together?
there was at one time going to be that. It's the conceit of the show is that it's an old-fashioned variety show, mm-hmm. the kind they don't do anymore. So it's like the Ed Sullivan Show. And we were going to have a host, but we don't have a host because mm-hmm. we can't have a host. We can't find a host. There is no host. So I'm not writing much. You know, the show will be fun. It'll just start and it'll be over in 2 hours, I promise. Unlike other benefits, this will be 2 hours in and out. I won't do any other kind. And but there's a lot of great songs. We have a 12-piece band.
Wow.
Nice.
Fantastic.
And the Playhouse is worth coming to if you've never been there. It's one of the most beautiful.
And that beautiful new, are they utilizing that new restaurant right off that courtyard there?
Well, it's there.
It's always been there. It's just a new place. It's a kind of a jazz-oriented situation.
Oh, okay. I thought it was new.
No, it's changed hands a lot.
Yeah, changed hands.
Okay.
A lot. But it's actually quite good. I had dinner there not too long ago.
Yes. I had a very good martini there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Try the food sometime.
I should, but you know me. If they don't have fish and chips, I'm not. I want to make sure. I'm not sure I have it here. Oh, for tickets to attend this, the One Starry Night, you can go to PasadenaPlayhouse.org/One Starry Night, or you can call via the electric telephone at 626-356-7529. That's 626-356-7529, and we will also throw that information out there.
And you can go for as little as $25, and believe me, that $25 will count for something, so don't make an excuse.
That's a good price for a ticket, much less a benefit. Benefit prices are usually through the roof, so that's very...
We wanted to keep this... I learned early on, the more affordable you keep it, where you can still make the money you want to make, but we have a silent auction. We have a live auction of just two items, one of which is Richard Sherman, a musical quote from...
Theater. You're auctioning off Richard
yes,
Sherman?
Yes, we are.
Wow.
He's very accommodating.
He's a giver.
A beautiful signed musical quote for Feed the Birds.
So. Oh, cool.
I know, that's right? Great. He's so cool. I just saw Saving Mr. Banks and had the pleasure of seeing it at Disney Studios in a private screening. And boy, oh boy, was that the icing on the cake. Just to walk into the studio to see this amazing movie that was shot at that studio, about this man, Walt Disney, and the Sherman Brothers. And to see Richard in that, time frame of his life.
Oh, right. Because, of course, they would be represented.
Boy, you saw it, I'm sure, right?
I did.
And I really was very taken aback, not only, of course, by the performances of Emma Thompson and Tom Hanks and Colin Farrell and the young lady who played his wife. Forgive me, I don't know her name, but she had very little dialogue, Colin Farrell's wife. But, my God, what she did with her face during this film.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing. It's funny, Michael, you see a lot of plays and you see a lot of films, but it is rare that you call me immediately after and recommend something.
Yeah.
You did with that.
Well, it's very special because there's a whole dark side of this story, and it's all to do with P.T. Travers, who wrote Mary Poppins, and based on her experiences growing up. And I don't think people really realize that, and they certainly will after they see this film.
She was giving a speech. Emma Thompson was giving a speech. She was awarded something for this, and she was in New York. It was in New York, and it was so brutally cold that she opened her speech with, "This is the first time I'm grateful for the menopause."
Well, definitely, that's a must see. But to see Richard Sherman live on any stage,
absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, anywhere, you must be there. One of the great men in our music business.
Bruce, I want to talk about something aside from One Starry Night with you, because it's such a big part of your life, and it's something I've had the opportunity to enjoy a couple of times. But please alert our listeners to the Kritzerland things that you do at Sterling's upstairs at the Federal, and how they can learn about those and attend those performances. I've always enjoyed myself there.
Yeah, this is we're in our third year of these. We just did our 41st show last Sunday.
41st
show last Sunday.
41 performances?
41 shows over 3 years. We've never missed a month yet,
and
we won't.
But they're, I keep doing them because they're just too much fun, and I work with amazing people, including Gordon.
Yeah, it was a real challenge to put it up on its feet in a week and a half, and man, the performers that you get are just amazing.
And they love doing it because we're not like the other people who do this or who see us and think they know how to do it. We rehearse, and the shows are structured and have a point, and you know, I talk.
And I must say, to that, he's become so very a very important aspect of the show. He is weaving everything together with very anecdotal stories, often of how the song came about, and or some sort of interesting. That's the key word, interesting information about the song and or its origin to getting where it was. And that's really what I think audiences appreciate, because he's become quite the personality up there. And he has an alter ego that is by the name of Guy Haynes, who occasionally stops by or not. And Bruce,
never stops by.
Bruce he always announces that he was supposed to be there, but instead he sings for Guy Haynes. And he's gotten – boy, there's no stage fright there, man. You are singing better than ever.
I tell you, it was so bad those first few shows. And now I feel I could actually like – do something, you know, go somewhere and act again.
Maybe. You could.
I don't want to, but I look forward to it now. It was like they had to drag me, you know, to I didn't want to do it in the first place. I thought the first two shows we did were based on my albums Lost in Boston and Unsung Musicals, and I thought you can't just sing those songs without context. Nobody will understand what it is, you know. They just won't even know how to react. So I wrote, and it wasn't good at that point. You know, I wasn't having fun because I thought, I can't be funny. I don't want to do that.
But you are.
But after about six shows, I sort of got, I see how this should go.
One of the things that you just mentioned, Michael, made me think of, and I'm hesitant to say it because I have to phrase it properly, but there's a. It's beautifully presented, but there is a wonderful informal nature to it. It's very warm. It's very inviting. It's not, you know, it's obviously rehearsed and beautifully presented. It's not like it's casual in its presentation.
Right.
But there is an informal element that you bring to it that really just sort of makes the audience kind of relax into this very... And the venue is perfect for that, because it's a big space certainly larger than Vitello's, but still has that intimacy, which really enjoyed that.
And I think the audience, equally looks toward Bruce's sense of humor and what he's about to say about the performance, you know, the upcoming performance and the performance.
Right.
And it's
plus the
part.
Nude water ballet.
Yeah.
Is excellent.
Well,
I don't know how long
you've
been doing
Can't
that.
Have
Bruce.
Enough of that.
And when do they drain that pool?
Or how often?
Okay. We have a good time, and Michael is a beautiful host for us.
Well, thank you. We have fun having you there. And also, this is a busy man. You know, he's got a show about out there in a theater in Santa Monica about the music of Anthony Newley, which you have put together and is up on its feet and it's running.
And the whole reason that show came about was because the owner, or the artistic director of that theater, Marilyn Fox, the Pacific Resident Theater, had an idea. She had a dream that she should do the music of Newley and Brickus. And she Googled, and the first hit was the review for our show. Because we did a Newley and Brickus show at the Federal.
Now, did he always write with Brickus?
Not always, but mostly.
Right.
And so she called me. She found me. And we had met, I think, long before in the 70s. And she called me and she said, would you do this? And I said, yeah, I think I could do this. And, you know, it happened very quickly. I mean, I put this in together. There was no show, and then there was a show in 3 weeks. But we have a really good cast. Three of the people are from her theater. And then I brought in Jane Noseworthy and little Sammy Statement.
Sammy, I know. I love Sammy Statement.
Bruce, is there a website you could pull up from memory that we could let people know about it? Or what? It's Pacific Resident Theater.
Pacific Resident Theater, and I think it's RE again.
Yeah,
But if you Google Pacific Resident Theater, you'll find it.
Okay.
And
up.
It runs Thursday through Sunday through March 1st.
Okay.
Beautiful. And he's working on a brand new album, a cast recording of And the World Goes Round.
Yes, I know, because I spoke to Joshua Kranz.
Yes, he's...
And he was telling me how excited he was.
That's
going to
be something else.
I know.
It's the first complete recording, and we have Christiane Nolan, Jason Grahn, Brett Barrett, and... Kira DaCosta and Kristen Talos.
First complete recording.
Roles.
Wow.
So fantastic. So I know that Joshua and Kristen are from the production.
The stage production.
Yeah, this really has nothing to do with that production.
Okay, okay.
It was just the catalyst.
But that's how I became familiar, because we had them on about that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. We've got to be on the lookout for that.
And he's going to do a little Abner at some point.
Yeah. I read his Wikipedia page. I was exhausted reading it. So I can't imagine what it's like to live.
That's a normal week in the life of,
Week in the life?
Week in the life.
Life in the week.
Life in the week.
We're talking about two events. We're going to put the information out one more time before we ask these gentlemen about an onstage mishap. We're talking about One Starry Night, and we're talking about Barrymore. Barrymore is at the El Portal Theater. For tickets, El Portal Theater with the RE spelling.com or 818-508-4200. And then for tickets to this One Starry Night, Hollywood and Broadway stars come together to fight ALS at the Pasadena Playhouse. That's Monday, January 13th at 8 p.m. Tickets, PasadenaPlayhouse.org/One Starry Night or 626-356-7529. Very, very exciting. And you can see both because they don't conflict because
that's
one's
right.
on a Monday night.
Absolutely.
There you go. Okay, Bruce, we didn't get a chance to tell you this because we didn't get you right at the start. So we'll start with Gordon. At the end of the show, we always like to ask our guests about a mishap or something that went wrong during performance that is funny to share with our listeners, not necessarily from the show you're in now, but any show you've done. You have one for us, Gordon?
Oh, before we go, I wanted to mention Matt Franta, who acts right along with me in Barrymore, and you just don't see him until the end. He's a wonderful young guy.
Oh, the prompter.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the Good People Theater Company. Yeah, I was doing a show called April Ann, and I did some of the music for it, and it was at the Glendale Center Theater years and years and years ago, and they decided to use a live rabbit in the show.
Okay, so jumping off the edge of the pool.
So we're doing this
very
serious scene, and they put this rabbit in a box and covered it with a cloth, and so we're doing this really intense scene, and all of a sudden people start laughing, and I think, I start looking at my clothes, I start wondering what's going on, and I turned around, and here's this cloth that's covering the rabbit bouncing up and down in that box. And then the rabbit got out and ran out through the audience.
That silly rabbit.
Never, children and rodents. Never perform with children or rodents. We had a guest on early on in our run who was doing a show, Gordon, off Broadway in New York at one of these really grungy little storefront theaters, and they had one of these theme park costumes, inflatable theme park costumes. You know, they sort of inflate around you. These, you know, the
like a sumo thing.
No, a theme park costume would be where a lot of people don't know how intricate they are. For those people who are out in the sun all the time, it has a pump in it. It fills up. Anyway, the costume sat unattended for the whole week, and the guy was on stage, and it inflated around him, and it was on stage that he discovered there was a live rat in the costume with him. So that was always like...
It must have been an unusual dance.
Yeah, exactly. Bruce, do you have one to share with us?
You know, I always go to the same story. It makes me laugh so hard, but I'll try to be brief. I was doing a play at the Mark Taper Forum here in Los Angeles called Forget Me Not Lane by an English playwright, Peter Nichols, and I acted with Bud Cort. We played best friends in the show. And John McMartin was in. It was about John McMartin's character looking back at his childhood. And Bud and I, Bud played him as a young man, and I played his best friend. And we have a scene in the second act where Bud's character has moved on to other things, and my character is stunted and only wants to relive, you know, our teen years. And at one point he says, and John McMartin like sits on the lip of the stage for most of the show and comments on things. So Bud says, I say I'm into jazz or Bix Beiderbecke or whatever. You know, I'm still listening to that stuff. And Bud goes, oh, I'm into Debussy now. And McMartin is supposed to say, poor prig. And he says, I'm into Debussy now. And there's nothing. And there's nothing. And there's nothing. And Bud is not an improviser, let me tell you, nor am I. But both our eyes at the same time go over to McMartin, who is asleep.
Oh!
On the stage. And Bud looks at me like you have never seen petrification like this. And he looks at me and I'm thinking, I can't lead this. My character would not say anything. I just looked at him. I went,
And he finally, after what seemed like 10 minutes, but it was probably 30 seconds, he says, "That Debussy, he was quite a guy." And then McMartin wakes up. And he goes, "Oh, poor priest."
Oh, my.
That's hysterical. That's very, very funny. The world of live theater.
Sleep on stage.
Yeah. Boy, that's a person who has no performance anxiety whatsoever.
At all.
None.
Oh, that's funny.
I've done that under 5,000 people in a symphony concert, and I fell asleep.
Really?
The director had to get right in front of me.
Well, gentlemen, we're out of time. A pleasure having you both on the show.
Absolutely.
With us. One final push for these two things. The two shows we're talking about, One Starry Night at the Pasadena Playhouse and Barrymore at the El Portal Theater.
Go out and see live theater, ladies and gentlemen. Take your family. Take your children.
Do. And it's good to be back, Michael. Good to
thank
see you after
here,
our little
Paul.
Break. And
absolutely.
We welcome. We're happy to be back. And, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
you, guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Art with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.